Chapter 6. Used to loaf around and watch the great chandelier in the cathedral at Pisa, which set him to thinking about the great law of gunpowder, and eventually led to the discovery of the cotton gin. Now, I don't say this as an inducement for our young men to loaf around like Mr. Newton and Mr. Galileo and Captain Smith, but they were once little babies 2 days old, and they show what little things have sometimes accomplished. Educating theater-goers, the children of the Educational Alliance gave a performance of The Prince and the Pauper on the afternoon of April 14, 1907, in the theater of the Alliance building in East Broadway. The audience was composed of nearly 1,000 children of the neighborhood. Mr. Clemens, Mr. Howells, and Mr. Daniel Frohman were among the invited guests. I have not enjoyed a play so much, so heartily, and so thoroughly, since I played Miles Hendon 22 years ago. I used to play in this piece The Prince and the Pauper with my children, who, 22 years ago, were little youngsters. One of my daughters was the prince, and a neighbor's daughter was the pauper, and the children of other neighbors played other parts. But we never gave such a performance as we have seen here today. It would have been beyond us. My late wife was the dramatist and stage manager. Our coachman was the stage manager, second in command. We used to play it in this simple way, and the one who used to bring in the crown on a cushion, he was a little fellow then, is now a clergyman way up high, 6 or 7 feet high and growing higher all the time. We played it well, but not as well as you see it here, for you see it done by practically trained professionals. I was especially interested in the scene which we have just had, for Miles Hendon was my part. I did it as well as a person could who never remembered his part. The children all knew their parts. They did not mind if I did not know mine. I could thread a needle nearly as well as the player did whom you saw today. The words of my part I could supply on the spot. The words of the song that Miles Hendon sang here I did not catch. But I was great in that song. Then Mr. Clemens hummed a bit of doggerel that the reporter made out as this. Here was a woman in her town, she loved her husband well, but another man just twice as well. How is that? Demanded Mr. Clemens. Then resuming, it was so fresh and enjoyable to make up a new set of words each time that I played the part. If I had 1,000 citizens in front of me, I would like to give them information, but you children already know all that I have found out about the Educational Alliance. It's like a man living within 30 miles of Vesuvius, and never knowing about a volcano. It's like living for a lifetime in Buffalo, 18 miles from Niagara, and never going to see the falls. So I had lived in New York, and knew nothing about the Educational Alliance. This theater is a part of the work, and furnishes pure and clean plays. This theater is an influence. Everything in the world is accomplished by influences which train and educate. When you get to be 71 and a half, as I am, you may think that your education is over, but it isn't. If we had 40 theaters of this kind in this city of 4 millions, how they would educate and elevate. We should have a body of educated theater goers. It would make better citizens, honest citizens. One of the best gifts a millionaire could make would be a theater here and a theater there. It would make of you a real republic and bring about an educational level. The Educational Theater on November 19, 1907, Mr. Clemens entertained a party of 600 or 700 of his friends, inviting them to witness the representation of The Prince and the Pauper, played by boys and girls of the East Side at the Children's Educational Theater, New York. Just a word or two, to let you know how deeply I appreciate the honor which the children who are the actors and frequenters of this cozy playhouse have conferred upon me. They have asked me to be their ambassador, to invite the hearts and brains of New York to come down here and see the work they are doing. I consider it a grand distinction to be chosen as their intermediary. Between the children and myself there is an indissoluble bond of friendship. I am proud of this theater and this performance. Proud, because I am naturally vain, vain of myself and proud of the children. I wish we could reach more children at one time. I am glad to see that the children of the East Side have turned their backs on the Bowery theaters to come to see the pure entertainments presented here. This children's theater is a great educational institution. I hope the time will come when it will be part of every public school in the land. I may be pardoned in being vain. I was born vain, I guess. At this point the stage manager's whistle interrupted Mr. Clemens. That settles it. There's my cue to stop. I was to talk until the whistle blew, but it blew before I got started. It takes me longer to get started than most people. I guess I was born at slow speed. My time is up, and if you'll keep quiet for 2 minutes I'll tell you something about Miss Hertz, the woman who conceived this splendid idea. She is the originator and the creator of this theater. Educationally, this institution coins the gold of young hearts into external good.
On April 23, 1908, he spoke again at the same place.
I will be strictly honest with you. I am only fit to be honorary president. It is not to be expected that I should be useful as a real president. But when it comes to things ornamental, I, of course, have no objection. There is, of course, no competition. I take it as a very real compliment, because there are thousands of children who have had a part in this request. It is promotion in truth. It is a thing worth doing that is done here. You have seen the children play. You saw how little Sally reformed her burglar. She could reform any burglar. She could reform me. This is the only school in which can be taught the highest and most difficult lessons, morals. In other schools the way of teaching morals is revolting. Here the children who come in thousands live through each part. They are terribly anxious for the villain to get his bullet, and that I take to be a humane and proper sentiment. They spend freely the 10 cents that is not saved without a struggle. It comes out of the candy money, and the money that goes for chewing gum and other necessaries of life. They make the sacrifice freely. This is the only school which they are sorry to leave. Poets as policemen, Mr. Clemens was one of the speakers at the Lotos Club dinner to Governor Otto, March 24, 1900. The police problem was referred to at length. Let us abolish policemen who carry clubs and revolvers, and put in a squad of poets armed to the teeth with poems on spring and love. I would be very glad to serve as commissioner, not because I think I am especially qualified, but because I am too tired to work and would like to take a rest. Howells would go well as my deputy. He is tired too, and needs a rest badly. I would start in at once to elevate, purify, and depopulate the red light district. I would assign the most soulful poets to that district, all heavily armed with their poems. Take Chauncey Depew as a sample. I would station them on the corners, after they had rounded up all the depraved people of the district, so they could not escape, and then have them read from their poems to the poor unfortunates. The plan would be very effective in causing an emigration of the depraved element. Pudd'nhead Wilson dramatized, when Mr. Clemens arrived from Europe in 1895, one of the first things he did was to see the dramatization of Pudd'nhead Wilson. The audience becoming aware of the fact that Mr. Clemens was in the house called upon him for a speech. Never in my life have I been able to make a speech without preparation, and I assure you that this position in which I find myself is one totally unexpected. I have been hemmed in all day by William Dean Howells and other frivolous persons, and I have been talking about everything in the world except that of which speeches are constructed. Then too, 7 days on the water is not conducive to speech making. I will only say that I congratulate Mr. Mayhew. He has certainly made a delightful play out of my rubbish. His is a charming gift. Confidentially, I have always had an idea that I was well equipped to write plays, but I have never encountered a manager who has agreed with me. Daily Theater, address at a dinner after the 100th performance of The Taming of the Shrew. Mr. Clemens made the following speech, which he incorporated afterward in Following the Equator. I am glad to be here. This is the hardest theater in New York to get into, even at the front door. I never got in without hard work. I am glad we have got so far in at last. 2 or 3 years ago I had an appointment to meet Mr. Daly on the stage of this theater at 8 o'clock in the evening. Well, I got on a train at Hartford to come to New York and keep the appointment. All I had to do was to come to the back door of the theater on 6th Avenue. I did not believe that. I did not believe it could be on 6th Avenue, but that is what Daly's note said. Come to that door, walk right in, and keep the appointment. It looked very easy. It looked easy enough, but I had not much confidence in the 6th Avenue door. Well, I was kind of bored on the train, and I bought some newspapers, New Haven newspapers, and there was not much news in them, so I read the advertisements. There was one advertisement of a bench show. I had heard of bench shows, and I often wondered what there was about them to interest people. I had seen bench shows, lectured to bench shows, in fact, but I didn't want to advertise them, or to brag about them. Well, I read on a little, and learned that a bench show was not a bench show but dogs, not benches at all, only dogs. I began to be interested, and as there was nothing else to do I read every bit of the advertisement, and learned that the biggest thing in this show was a St. Bernard dog that weighed 145 pounds. Before I got to New York I was so interested in the bench shows, that I made up my mind to go to one the first chance I got. Down on 6th Avenue, near where that back door might be, I began to take things leisurely. I did not like to be in too much of a hurry. There was not anything in sight that looked like a back door. The nearest approach to it was a cigar store. So I went in, and bought a cigar, not too expensive, but it cost enough to pay for any information I might get, and leave the dealer a fair profit. Well, I did not like to be too abrupt, to make the man think me crazy, by asking him if that was the way to Daly's theater, so I started gradually to lead up to the subject, asking him first if that was the way to Castle Garden. When I got to the real question, and he said he would show me the way, I was astonished. He sent me through a long hallway, and I found myself in a backyard. Then I went through a long passageway, and into a little room, and there before my eyes was a big St. Bernard dog lying on a bench. There was another door beyond, and I went there, and was met by a big fierce man with a fur cap on and coat off, who remarked, "What do yez want?" I told him I wanted to see Mr. Daly. "Yez can't see Mr. Daly this time of night," he responded. I urged that I had an appointment with Mr. Daly, and gave him my card, which did not seem to impress him much. "Yez can't get in, and yez can't smoke here. Throw away that cigar. If yez want to see Mr. Daly, yez'll have to be after going to the front door, and buy a ticket, and then if yez have luck, and he's around that way yez may see him." I was getting discouraged. But I had one resource left that had been of good service in similar emergencies. Firmly but kindly I told him my name was Mark Twain, and I awaited results. There was none. He was not fazed a bit. "Where's your order to see Mr. Daly?" he asked. I handed him the note, and he examined it intently. "Why, friend," I remarked, "you can read that better if you hold it the other side up." But he took no notice of the suggestion, and finally asked Colin where's Mr. Daly's name. "Here it is," I told him, "on the top of the page." "That's all right," he said, "that's where he always puts it, but I don't see the W in his name," and he eyed me distrustfully. Finally, he asked, "What do yez want to see Mr. Daly for?" "Usiness." "Usiness?" "Yes. It was my only hope." "What kind theaters?" That was too much. "Oh. Hat kind of shows, then?" "And shows." It was risky, but I was desperate.
bench shows, is it where? The big man's face changed, and he began to look interested.
Ilhaven,
it is? Ah, that's going to be a fine show. I'm glad to see you. Did you see a big dog in the other room?
Yes.
How much do you think that dog weighs?
145 pounds.
Look at that now. He's a good judge of dogs, and no mistake. He weighs all of 138. Sit down and smoke. Go on and smoke your cigar. I'll tell Mr. Daly you are here. In a few minutes I was on the stage shaking hands with Mr. Daly, and the big man standing around glowing with satisfaction.
Ohm around in front, said Mr. Daly, and see the performance.
I will put you into my own box. And as I moved away I heard my honest friend mutter, well, he deserves it.
The dress of civilized woman, a large part of the daughter of civilization is her dress as it should be. Some civilized women would lose half their charm without dress, and some would lose all of it. The daughter of modern civilization dressed at her utmost best as a marvel of exquisite and beautiful art and expense. All the lands, all the climes, and all the arts are laid under tribute to furnish her forth. Her linen is from Belfast, her robe is from Paris, her laces from Venice, her Spain, her France, her feathers are from the remote regions of southern Africa, her furs from the remoter region of the iceberg and the aurora, her fan from Japan, her diamonds from Brazil, her bracelets from California, her pearls from Ceylon, her cameos from Rome. As he has gems and trinkets from buried Pompeii, and others that grace comely Egyptian forms that have been dust and ashes now for 40 centuries. Her watches from Geneva, her card cases from Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.